Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN. I'm David Dye. Meet Sam Outlaw. Sam did what many of us actually hoped to do, reinvent ourselves. He went from a digital advertising salesperson to following his dreams to do music. In June, he released his debut album, Angelino. Today, we'll hear the story of how it came to be produced by fellow Angelino and roots rock legend and producer of the Buena Vista Social Club, Ry Cooter. We'll meet Sam in just a moment after this performance of his song, I'm Not Jealous.
It was a one, two. You stay out late most every night, and I know why you're gone. But I don't get bent out of shape, don't cry and carry on. Still you call me the jealous type, but darling, that ain't true. I'm not jealous of them, I'm embarrassed for you. And our friends all know the things you do while you're out running around. And I've heard all the stories about wild girl in town, but I'd be just as wild and mean to let my temper rule. So I'm not jealous of them, I'm embarrassed for you. And I don't imagine they got something special that I stop you, dear, from acting like a fool. No, I'm not jealous of them, I'm embarrassed for you.
Little pedal steel man. Yeah. All right.
That I ain't got. Oh no, I think you're trying to solve a problem that cheating never solved. So I won't try to stop you, dear, if you like acting like a fool. No, I'm not jealous of them, I'm embarrassed for you. And I'm not jealous.
Now, isn't that exactly what you thought a guy named Sam Outlaw would sound like? It's Sam and his five-piece band playing live for us today, and that's a cheating song with a twist called I'm Not Jealous, which is on his debut album called Angelino. And Sam, thanks a lot for being here, bringing the band.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Sounds great. Now, I want to find out about your background because there are things I don't know about the Dakotas, and you're going to tell us about it. But I would love to find out about how this little journey in Los Angeles has been for you, because being a professional country music musician in
superstar
in Los Angeles was not how your life there started, right?
Yeah, man. I actually just quit my day job like a month ago, but I was working as an ad salesman, selling digital advertising for the last like almost 10 years. and I guess kind of kept music at arm's length out of just abject fear and ego. So I've been kind of giving it my best the last really year or so, and it's been a big change for sure.
Now, did you would you play at all with your friends and stuff during that period of time when you weren't really being professional?
Yeah, I mean, I first started playing out and doing country music in 2009, but like I said, you know, it's not like it's easy to find like a great pedal steel player out in L.A., or at least not one that I could afford, or like, you know, especially 5 or 6 years ago, there just wasn't a lot of roots music in Southern California, and I've definitely seen a really kind of impressive shift in the last couple of years to people doing more of this kind of music. But I mean, it was really, you know, I'd sit at home, I'd write songs. I was working all the time, so a lot of times, like, most of my songs I wrote while driving or just, you know, kind of while working. And when I would get home, I would try to remember to try to, you know, eke out a demo or something. But it definitely took a little while to get to where I am now.
How did this band come together?
Well, first of all, I love this band so much. A lot of it started, let's see, well, Jeremy Long, my awesome pedal steel player, who's also the steel player for the record that we did with Ry Cooter. So Jeremy was someone that was recommended to me by a guy who owns a studio in Long Beach, and I just cold called him a few years ago, and I said, hey, I really like, you know, George Jones and classic country music. What do you think? And he's like, I like that too. And like most pedal steel players, most good pedal steel players spent a while telling me how not good he is. Because any real pedal steel player knows it's a lifelong commitment to learn that instrument. We've got my dear friend Molly Jensen singing harmonies and playing guitar. Molly and I actually went to the same high school, but she's a great singer-songwriter in her own right. Molly introduced me to Daniel Ryan, who is my bass player and one of the greatest bass players and harmony singers. So it's great that we've got somebody with harmony chemistry in the band. And then I also met my drummer Darla Hahn through Molly. So Molly is the major connector here. Darla is drumming with us today, and she just totally rules and proves that girls can do cool stuff. And she sings like a bird too, so we're gonna actually, I guess she was the one singing on the last one with Molly. And then last but not least is the very awesome Jason Laughlin, who lives here in New York. I met him through Daniel, my bass player, and just kind of became a fan of his. He's a really incredible guitar player. He does his own kind of Western swing thing as well as many other things. This is really his first time ever playing with us, and I'm pretty sure he's nailing it. So that's the band, and I can say very confidently I'm the weakest link in the band, and I'm happy to be that.
Well, I wanted to talk about the band. I want to talk a little bit about the songs and your writing before I brought up Ry Cooter, because it seems to me it has to go that way, that he would not have been interested. He and Joaquin Cooter would not have been interested in working on this record if they hadn't heard something. And how did they hear you, and how did that get together?
Yeah, so less than a year ago, I was, you know, still kind of trying to figure out what I was going to do. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm feeling like things are starting to pick up with the live shows, and it's like, okay, we're noticing like more than just our close personal friends are coming to the shows. Maybe we almost have a few fans. So I was like, okay, I feel like I need to take this whole thing to the next level. I need to make a record that properly kind of captures, I guess, the best of my songs. And I was looking around for a producer and had different ideas, but I didn't really have anyone really in mind. I called up Joaquin Cooter because I knew he was a great drummer. I'd met him the year before on tour, and I asked him if he'd play drums on my record, and he fortunately said yes. So we all got together, kind of was with my regular band, and then Joaquin on drums in my living room at home in Los Angeles. And we, you know, rehearsed some tunes, we worked on some new stuff, we thought about, you know, retracking some old songs, but we're really just rehearsing in the living room. And I recorded that rehearsal on my iPhone. I, like, took my phone, set it on the fireplace mantle, and started, you know, I just kind of hit record. And a few days later, Joaquin calls me up, and he's like, hey man, are you still looking for a producer? I said, yeah, like, do you know of anybody? And he's like, well, I think if you recorded that stuff we did the other day, I think I'd like to send those to Rye. And he doesn't say dad, you know, he says Rye. And I was just kind of like, well, why? You know, like, why would that dude want to hear my tunes? He's like, I don't know, but just send them to me and we'll see. So I sent the stuff to Joaquin, he sent them to Rye, and next thing I know, a few days later, Joaquin calls me back, he said, hey man, Rye wants to get together and have breakfast. And so the rest, I guess they say, is history. We got together and just really hit it off. Rye is a humongous country music fan, and he's kind of an encyclopedia of knowledge of all music, but especially of country music, and especially of, you know, the history, the rich history of country music in California. So it was really important to me that this album, Angelino, kind of incorporated the L.A. vibe and was distinct from other kinds of country music happening right now.
And from listening to this, I can hear things that I would say, oh, I think Rye might have thought of that. For instance, on the lead track, there's the mariachis on that, and yeah. And this whole Latino thing, which is a big part of obviously culture in Los Angeles. I'd love it if you could do that one. I don't assume you have the mariachis there with you today, unfortunately.
No, we've got a 16-piece mariachi band in here, yeah. So
excellent.
No, we don't. Yeah, so we don't. But, yeah, we can do that one. It's the, like you said, it's a lead track from the record. Rye was definitely the one to bring in the mariachis, and he wisely brought in Jesus Chuy Guzman, who is kind of the guru out there in L.A. of the mariachis. And I really feel like it was one of the most special things in my life to get to see Rye kind of direct the mariachis and the arrangements on the spot, almost like a movie director, you know? So we can do that one. This is the lead track from the record, and it definitely has that kind of Baja vibe to it. And this song is called Who Do You Think You Are?
Some other guy. And what did you think that that was just some other night? And what do you want me to do? I'm waiting around. Now how long will you play it cool? It's bringing me down. Breaking my heart. Where do you get it off running around? How do you think I feel left in the dark? Hey girl, showed up wearing that dress and shooting Patron. We danced together all night, girl, you got some moves. Now you're not just someone to me, what am I to you? Who do you think you are, looking so good?
Who do you think you are? Sam Outlaw is our guest today, playing live with his band, and he's got a new album called Angelino, which he calls SoCal country, which makes a lot of sense because he comes from Southern California. My understanding, Sam, and correct me, is that when your family first moved from South Dakota to California, you lived in San Diego?
Yeah, we moved to North County, San Diego, a city called Poway, which they've deemed the city in the country.
Ah, well, what age were you when that happened?
I was 10 years old. I remember we left on my 10th birthday.
Wow.
So, and you know, moving, even though it was San Diego, to me, like, I thought we were moving to like Hollywood, you know, like it was like we were moving to where the movie stars were, and it felt very glamorous.
Well, what did it feel like in South Dakota? Because I understand that your parents were fairly conservative Christians.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, pop music was not around or what?
So it's like one of those things where, like, I wasn't really allowed to listen to the radio yet. You know, people will find a way to make exceptions to every rule if they like stuff. So, like, my dad loved the Beatles, so the Beatles were okay. My mom, you know, always lets us listen to oldies radio, so it was, you know, the Beach Boys and the Everly Brothers and Frankie Valli. So it's not like I had any shortage of great music in my life, but there was really only, you know, one country band that I could speak of that I actually grew up on, and that's a fantastic Western swing band called Asleep at the Wheel. So I think it's really Ray Benson, Asleep at the Wheel, that maybe kind of set the stage for me one day falling in love with country music.
And my understanding is that George Jones fit in there somewhere at some point, right?
Yeah, so Asleep at the Wheel was all growing up, right? That was the one country band that was every road trip, every holiday. And then the rest happened later. So I was 22 years old. I was working my first job out of college at this little record label in Southern California. And I got some really bad stomach bug or something. And so I was home extremely sick from work and kind of going back and forth between the bathroom and the couch. And I'm channel surfing and just trying to kind of keep it together and killing time. And I stumbled on, I believe it was CMT doing like top 100 country singers of all time or some kind of countdown list, you know, like one of those. And that was the first time, I think I got there in time for like the top dozen or so. And that was the first time I heard like George Jones and the first time I really heard Emmylou Harris and Merle Haggard. And it honestly just totally blew my mind. I went out the next day and gathered myself together and went out and bought a George Jones compilation. And I bought Emmylou Harris's first record, which has, you know, songs written by the Louvin Brothers and Graham Parsons. So even those two records just right there were kind of a great place to start to start diving into country.
Absolutely. And what about the leap to actually saying, oh, well, I can write these?
You know, it's funny when I look back on some of the really horrible songs I was trying to write, even when I was in college, you know, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, those were actually kind of country songs, but I didn't know it. So I think it was definitely hearing the music of George Jones that made me say that country music is the best music. So if I'm going to put my efforts into writing anything, I want to be writing country music. I guess how I was saying, you fall in love with something, you start by simply almost just copying it and emulating it and just in your own way, just trying to be that thing. And then slowly over the last 10 years, I guess I've been maybe trying to develop my own voice and what and who I am within all this. But it started with George Jones.
Well, the album is called Angelino, and although you say it's kind of tough having a country band in Los Angeles, there have been a number over the years, and I know I point to somebody like Dwight Yoakam, who you know, has come in with this hard country sound that really kind of captured things there. Talk a little bit about Los Angeles, because the album is called Angelino. There's a couple songs about it, and what's it mean to you, and how does it fit into your songs?
Well, you know, L.A., I think it's one of those towns, obviously, where, like, there's very few people that are, like, born and raised there. Like, L.A. is still so full of people who are not from L.A. And so I think as much as I don't feel like I fit in with Los Angeles or, like, that's my home or that's my, like, you know, my myself, I think a lot of people feel that way. So in that way, it kind of is like home. And, you know, I knew that I wanted this record to capture that Southern California flavor. So that's why we have the tunes that kind of have the, you know, the Mexican or Baja California feel to them. There's songs that kind of harken back to just like, you know, the singer-songwriters of the 60s and 70s and the troubadour scene. So Jackson Browne and Crosby, Stills and Nash and James Taylor. So that's mixed in there. But I think L.A. to me is a wonderful place to be writing country music because it has a very special sadness. Mm. I think the people in Los Angeles somehow understand that we are almost left with this ghost of what used to be. And although it's sad and although LA is still great, out of that sadness obviously creates some really rich emotion and gives you a sporting chance of maybe creating good art. So LA is still a place where there is good music being made. There's still good country music being made. I think there always will be. And obviously, you know, when you mention someone like Dwight Yoakam, who's an absolute idol of mine, the history of country music in LA is incredible. I mean, obviously, Wynn Stewart and the guys that are doing it in Bakersfield, Buck Owens, and Merle Haggard. So I try to tell people, as much as I care about people knowing who I am and like liking Sam Outlaw and knowing the name and whatnot, if I can in any way help people discover the rich history of country music in Southern California, then actually I think that might even be more special. So at our shows, you know, we try to cover like Merle tunes and I guess kind of help turn people on to the history of country music.
Hmm. Well, pretty good time for Ghost Town because that's kind of about L.A., right?
Yeah, well, Ghost Town, like any song, I guess I'd want to be left up to interpretation, but if I'm going to be completely honest, really Ghost Town is it's about my family. It's the first song I completed after my mom passed away a couple years ago, and it's meant to kind of tell the story of that feeling of going home to a place and it not feeling like home anymore. So it's in some ways it's a really sad song for me, but, you know, as you can understand, writing a song about something is also kind of a means of getting beyond it and moving on from it. So, you know, I keep the outlaw name because it's a way I can honor my mom, and this song, Ghost Town, is about her.
We should tell people that Outlaw was her maiden name, right?
That's right, yeah. Outlaw is my mom's maiden name. So, you know, obviously, if you're playing country music on the name Outlaw, people assume it's fake,
right.
Which is okay. But so I try to, when I take at least a few seconds at every show to mention Outlaw is my mother's maiden name, it's a family name.
So you can see this city just how it used to be, burning with the fire of industry. Wish that you could feel the life we once felt on these streets, but you can't. No, you can't, 'cause I'm on my way. Some kind of ghost town. I'm on my way back home. I'm on my way. Wish that I could slow down, but I'm on my way back home. There's nothing but a wounded highway, no blood in these veins. You hardly see a car, truck, or train. To say what happened, but I want someone to blame. But I can't. No, I can't. 'Cause I'm on my way to some kind of ghost town. I'm on my way back home. I'm on my way. Wish that I could slow down, but I'm on my way back. Looking for some answers in the rubble, rocks, and sand. But digging's got me nothing but some more dirt on my hands. I didn't see it coming, never thought we'd see her fall. But maybe she was crumbling all along. Family just how it used to be, burning with a love so bright and free. I wish that I could hold my mama just once more before she leaves, but I can't. No, I can't. No, I can't. Slow down, I'm on my way.
Ghost Town. That is Sam Outlaw, our guest today on The Cafe from Angelino. His new album, but live version for us today, a song about the passing of his mom and where he got his name, Sam Outlaw. Okay, I'm sorry. I have to ask more. What was Ry Cooder like as a producer? Was he like the great Buddha sitting there passing out words of wisdom, or how did it work?
Well, I can tell you he definitely didn't like phone it in, man. He was there. First of all, he plays on every song. So for the basic tracking, it was, you know, my band and him on guitar and his son Joaquim on drums. So like he was playing every song with us. He overdubbed a lot of other stuff as well. He sings harmonies on one of the songs. He was there for every square second of the tracking, giving me direction on my vocals, on playing, on voicings, on the acoustics. You know, when you have a guy like that who's kind of like a, I think they call him celebrity producers, there's always the thought that maybe like he'll kind of take a bit of a back seat, or, you know, kind of be just, you know, piecing out with his latte and checking in every once in a while. But he was very hands on. And I mean, it was not only great to get to see the chemistry between him and Joaquim during the bass tracking and watch them kind of catch a little moment that they both thought was cool and kind of be happy about something that just happened live in the room, but it was really special just to get to see a record get made with Ry Cooder's guitar playing on it.
I mean, it took until
like the CD was made and I'm looking down and seeing a physical disc that says produced by Ry Cooder, to like, oh my God, I just made a record produced by Ry Cooder. But he's like, when it comes to music, he was almost like a little kid. He would get really excited about songs, and again, next thing I know, he's in there like wanting to sing a harmony on it. So, you know, I will say that, you know, at some point, maybe during the day, when he's done for the day, he's done for the day. You know, like that's it, and then we got what we got. But I really don't think I could have had a more positive experience working with someone. And again, someone like me at Square Zero, who there's no reason that he would like kind of, it doesn't contribute to his like, you know, resume to be like, I made a Sam Outlaw record. So it felt very cool to have people in the room that were just there because they wanted to play music.
Did you and the band learn anything about playing together from him? Because one of the things you notice in the things he produces is he just gets these amazing performances out of people.
Well, you know, we had done, after that first breakfast where he said he would like to produce the record, I got back to my computer and I already had like 5 emails from him. Like, have you heard this song? What do you think about this writer? And, oh, we should try this. And one of them was, hey, I see you have a show coming up at the Echo in Los Angeles. If it's okay with you, I should like to sit in with the band and play and get more familiar with the tunes. And I just wrote back like, yes, please. So he played actually a few gigs with us, you know, with him as my 6-string player in my band, both in L.A. and a little south there in Orange County, and then also in Nashville at Americana Fest. So, I mean, we had played a few times together, and then I thought, you know, I had in the calendar, like, we're going to do 3 or 4 straight days of pre-production where we get in the room and we just play every single song 20 times so we go and ready to go. And he was like, no, man, like, that's not how to make a record. Let's leave some room for magic and mystery. And I think what I learned was that I need to stop worrying so much. Like, I'm a little bit of a type A, overly organized stress case, and he's not. He definitely cares about something being good, but I think it calmed me down to see people in the room who are just looking to, you know, kick back and make music and see what happens.
Yeah. Sam, I just got to ask you again about you know, quitting your day job. You were doing pretty well selling digital ad space, and then you made the decision to finally quit that. Was that scary?
Yeah. I mean, but like, what was scarier was looking down the gun of living the rest of my life not giving a crap about what I'm doing with all my time. 2 years ago, I threw myself like one of those like kind of show off 30th birthday parties because I had, you know, a nice car and some disposable income and a hot girlfriend who's now my hot wife. So I rented out a bar in like Silver Lake and had, you know, open bar and DJ and all this stuff and cool party. I'm such a cool guy. And I woke up the next morning and like the dust settled and I kind of had never felt more empty. I think it was then that I realized like, all right, dude, you have to be honest with yourself, what you care about. You care about music. Maybe you're not the best. Cause I have those voices that are like, well, you're not Willie Nelson, so why even try? Mm-hmm. You're not this person. So why, you know, like who do you think you are, dude? And, I struggle with those voices every day, but yeah, it was really scary. I quit my day job about a week before we went to South by Southwest. And I mean, I still right now wake up some mornings with my heart beating out of my chest with those voices going, you don't got it. You can't do it. You're not going to make it. You're no good. And I just, I just tell it to shut up. And I remind myself that it's not about being, you know, where you will eventually maybe be. It's about trying your darndest to and do your best. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but that's really what you got to do.
It's a journey.
It's a journey. That's yep. right. Yeah. So I feel very lucky to have a wife who supports me and literally believes in me and says stuff like like when I called her, I said, "Hey, I think it's time to quit the job." And she just goes, and I didn't know what she was going to say. I was kind of nervous. She just goes, "Ugh, I've been waiting so long for you to say that." and that was a pretty amazing moment. And I count myself very lucky to have somebody like that.
Well, you're on your way. This is a really nice first album, and really appreciate that you had a chance to come on with us.
Thanks, David. It's been our pleasure, and we can't thank you enough.
I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN is produced at WXBN in Philadelphia. If you'd like to hear more of our World Cafe sessions and get daily cafe alerts, you can sign up at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks for spending your time with the World Cafe.